First of all, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting us in this forum, because while many of our rights are constantly violated, it is very seldom that we have a chance to interact with human rights groups. You know, para lang yung trade union movement sa Pilipinas, yung labor movement sa Pilipinas, ay isang separate na taiklik sa HR community. No? So it's great to have an opportunity to interact with you this way. No? And I look forward to having more interactions like this, lalo na kung siniseryoso naman ng gobyerno nito yata yung kanilang mga ina-establish ng mga monitoring bodies. No? I've been wondering how I'll make out my presentation on red painting. I think the best way is to just start by stating the obvious. No? The obvious point is that red painting and all the injustices that we have heard is actually the result of a situation, of a society, which is very much where inequality is huge. No? So long as we have a society where the top 20% of our population owns 53% of the wealth of the country, and the lowest 20% of our population has to make do with the 5% of the wealth of our country, this kind of injustice will always go on and on and on. It will worsen, no? That's the problem. That's the reason why it is imperative for us in the labor movement to start organizing, no? And to keep organizing and to keep fighting for the rights of workers. But at this point, I need to shift to my own language because I think I ran out of English. So, but here's the thing, here's the problem. So there's inequality, and because of inequality, there is this problem, all these injustices that we have been hearing. So the solution is to try to address the source of inequality, the root of inequality. And the labor movement is one of the best ways to do that. Because the objective of the labor movement is to make sure that the workers themselves, the workers who are the producers of wealth in this country, would have a fair share of their labor, of the fruits of their labor. So that's the whole point of trade unionism. And it's good to know that in our country, historically, there are right to organize, to collectively bargain, to strike, has been recognized by the Constitution. No? It's in our labor code, it's in our Constitution, we are a signatory to the ILO conventions, no, etc., etc., etc. But the problem is, despite the fact that the trade unionism is formally recognized in this country, the fact remains that this country is still very dangerous for trade unionists like me. It is dangerous not only because we are usually attacked by employers who doesn't want to share the wealth, no, that they think they are entitled to. But at the same time, if we start fighting the employer, we're also being attacked by the military and the PNP, who is widely perceived, and I'm using this quite diplomatically, no? So at least I'm trying to use this in my mouth, I'm trying to say this in a more diplomatic way, no? Who is widely perceived as being under the pay or influence or who are sympathetic to the employers themselves, no? But that's just one part of the equation. The other part of the equation of the violence that we have to face is the fact that while we are while we are being attacked by the employer with the support of the legitimate coercive arm of the state, on the other hand, we're also being attacked by non-state actors, especially if we are not we do not belong to a particular ideological stream that would tend to compete with our own ideological perspective. No? So, if there's red baiting, there's also what I would call maybe yellow baiting. No? So there's red baiting where we are being painted as communists. On the other hand, now pink is a different thing. I'll tell you that later on. No? So, just between the two of us. So. But on the other hand, there are those also who are attacking us as yellow unions. No? So we're being sandwiched by two sources of violence. No? So that's the problem. Despite the fact that this is our right, this is still a very dangerous country for trade unionists like me. Now the question is why? Why is it still dangerous for us? No? After more than 100 years of struggling and fighting for the rights of every working of the working class in this country. Why is it that we are still that organizing drives and our right to organize, our right to strike, and our right to collectively bargain is always responded to violently by the powers that be? First, because, and I mentioned this already, no, but because the fact of the matter is, we still have a labor code, a labor relations that was defined by the martial law years, no. Okay, when I said a while ago that martial law is alive and well in the labor front, I'm not kidding you guys. I mean, it's true. No, it's as if we're still facing the period where we have to deal with the martial law. And what's the effect? The effect is it's so hard for us to organize nowadays. From a height of about 2 million 20 years ago, today, there are only about 1.1 million plus organized members of the working class. No. But of the 1 million who are organized, only about 250,000 enjoy collective bargaining agreement. So what does that mean? You have 1 million membership, you have a quarter of which who are enjoying collective bargaining agreements, most of which, let's say about 50% of which would probably be not that good, no? We call it sweetheart contracts, or it's a collective agreement signed by the management and the workers, but essentially it just repeats everything that the labor code says. No, so you compress the labor code, ask the workers and the management to sign it. That's called the sweetheart contract. So you have a situation where 3/4 of those who are supposed to be unionized actually belong to unions that are joke-only unions. And I say joke-only because if you have a union and you don't have proper collective bargaining agreement, then it's a joke. It's a very big joke. Now. So that's one area. But the other area is that many of our employers, especially the big ones, still look at trade unionists as subversives, as the black sheep of their family. No, many employers still think of their company as their family, and if you start organizing and start demanding things from them, then they treat you as black sheep. So there's that Jurassic thinking among the employers. That's another source of the problem. And the third is that there is an ongoing counterinsurgency program. And the counterinsurgency program in the country fits snugly well with the objective of the employers to undermine trade unionism in this country. It fits snugly well. No? If you read the internal peace and security plan, no, that was mentioned by Colonel Tutan a while ago, and we mentioned this, we pointed this out yesterday. If you read that plan, you will find out that they clearly spelled out that they have an ideological enemy, and the ideological enemy are the communists who intends to supplant the state with their own, how was it worded, totalitarian views, no, or something to that effect. Now, if you frame your plan, your counterinsurgency plan, as targeting ideological enemies, then anyone, and let me use now the words of Yusek earlier today, no? Anyone who would start quacking like a communist would then be easily treated as a communist. And that's the value of red baiting. So red baiting is actually one of the many techniques that employers, that the coercive arm of the state is using in order to quell political dissent. And as long as the plan of the AFP focuses on such ideological enemies, then I say that the trade unionists would always be affected. No? But the good news is that Colonel Tutan mentioned that we were together yesterday, no? So that they would not suspect me of doing something else. No? I might as well explain. No? There's a tripartite industrial peace council effort to try to come up with guidelines, no? An AFP-PNP guideline. We now have a PNP guideline, no? Which seems to have been violated again and again. No? First during the PAL case, that guidelines are being clearly violated, and then there's other things. No? But now we're trying to craft the guidelines with AFP. And I have to tell you, I think the people who are working with us from the AFP side, like Kermit Rutan, I think these guys are serious about what they wanted to do. I mean, well, see, do I get some points for that? But they have a very big problem. They have a very big problem. And I pointed this out to them yesterday. Their problem is that they are representing an institution that has to regain the confidence of the people. And that's a big problem. Why? Because up to this point, and I mentioned this yesterday again, but Colonel Tutan wasn't there, so I might as well say it again. Why? Because the AFP has yet to apologize for all the atrocities of the institution during the martial law years. The AFP has yet to apologize for all the killings that was done under the Gloria Arroyo regime. And the AFP has yet to apologize with even the recent cases that we see, that we have heard. I have yet to hear this institution apologize to its own people. And I might be wrong. If they did, then great. Give me a copy of that so I can explain that to my own members. But the other point is that because there's such a gap in credibility, I think it is imperative for the institution to prove that they are really serious. And I challenge them that if they want to be serious about it, if they want us to take them seriously. We want to take them seriously because in our guidelines, they have already agreed yesterday that they say no to red baiting. That they do not agree with that, that they, they will respect trade union rights, they will respect labor rights, they will put in their core list of values, the ILO conventions, Those things I really, really appreciate. But if the institution really wants to prove that, wants us to believe that this is something that they are really serious in, I challenge the institution, help us jail someone. Help us jail at least someone. There are 13 cases of trade union killing still pending before the ILO. Help us. It's not moving in DOJ. Why? Because DOJ is simply saying, well, there's no proof, no one is stepping forward. The same things that Max has been saying. But we've heard already, the AFP, if it wants to, as an institution, and I'm not saying Colonel Tatan, your institution, if it wants to, well, you can simply open up, what do you call that? The routes, the report, the post-encounter reports? Post-operation reports. Can we see that? That would be set the things moving. So I think that's the best way to prove that, for an institution to prove that they are seriously addressing this problem. I'm sorry, I was intending to line up, list down some of the red baiting techniques that we experienced, but I guess you've heard a lot of that already, so I figured you don't need that anymore. Right, so just to end by saying that, as I said, in my situation, we are tagged as red by the military, in the media, in the newspapers, or sometimes the military personnel will knock on the houses of our, they would go house to house, talk to our members. No, actually they talk to the wives of our members, and then the military personnel would say, oh, your husband is an NPA operator, because he's now a member of APL. I tell them, listen, you've got to explain to these intelligence officers, who apparently are not that intelligent. You've got to explain them that APL is not small time. Why are they accusing us of NPA, being an NPA, when in fact we are APL? We are much more radical than those guys. Thank you very much.